uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And greetings, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Greetings, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live on radio stations from California to Pennsylvania, beaming down from outer space on the Sirius satellite radio system, streaming around the planet on radiopower.org, whiterosesociety.org, podcasting on whiterosesociety.org, and on Apple iTunes. Welcome to our program. Has the Bush administration let us down? And might this be something part of a larger and even more systemic something? At the bottom of the hour, we're going to have former Reagan administration official and author Barbara Honegger on. And right now we have with us in the studio Congressman Brian Baird of Washington State. Congressman Brian Baird, a Democrat of Washington State. Welcome, Congressman Baird.
Great to be with you, Tom.
I'm so glad to have you here. I'm looking at a bunch of stories here. For example, this from the Washington Post, September 13, 2001, 2 days after 9/11. U.S. and Israeli intelligence agencies received warning signals at least 3 months ago. Now, this would have been 3 months prior to 9/11. The Middle Eastern terrorists were planning to hijack commercial aircraft to use as weapons to attack important symbols of American culture, according to a story that was published that day in the Frankfurter Allgemeine Zeitung, the main German newspaper. This from the wire service on the 14th. FBI ignored warnings of fanatical student pilot. And it just goes, I mean, I've got this long list of criminal negligence or treason. The following reports from semi-official New York Times makes it clear that either Americans, you know, bloody, bloody, bloody. I need not read all these. To what extent? You've been in Congress throughout this process, throughout this time, and you're an observer of this. To what extent has this administration failed us, both when it comes to general security and specifically when it comes to 9/11? And before you answer that, let me just also toss in, if any of our callers, any of our listeners have questions for Congressman Brian Baird of Washington State, our number toll-free, 1-866-889-8894 across the United States. Outside the United States, we had a call yesterday from Iceland, in fact. Outside the United States, 503-248-0620. And if you want to drop into our chat room, tomhartman.com. Congressman Baird.
Well, Tom, as you mentioned, I think there's been an abundance of information suggesting that prior to September 11th, there were warnings, and frankly, the administration didn't really seem to take them seriously. The attitude seemed to be, anything at all that comes from a Clinton administration official, we just disregard. There was a certain hubris and arrogance and overconfidence in the time leading up to 9/11. But, you know, it wasn't just the ignorance of the al-Qaeda threat, their refusal to pay attention to that. The administration did other things prior to 9/11 that I think reduced our security. They were cutting funds for the Nunn-Lugar program. Now, Nunn-Lugar is the program that's designed to restrain loose nukes, former Soviet-era nukes and others. You know, you have to say, if there's a greatest danger to us in the long run, it's going to be that one of these crazy organizations gets a hold of a nuclear weapon. This administration had cut funds for that. They were not actively engaged in the Israeli-Palestinian issue, which frankly is one of the flashpoints for that region. In a host of ways before 9/11, I think they were not on the ball from security perspective. And since 9/11, what have they done? Well, every member of Congress voted to authorize force in Afghanistan. That was the right thing. This administration did not finish the job in Afghanistan. Instead, they diverted resources, both troops on the ground, other assets, and frankly, security assets, to Iraq instead, where frankly, not a single one of the terrorists came from. The terrorists were not training there. So they ignored threats beforehand. After the attack, they went after the wrong enemy, and they allowed Osama bin Laden to escape.
It's as if we'd been hit in Pearl Harbor and we declared war on Brazil.
It's not a bad analogy.
Now, you remember the movie The Manchurian Candidate?
Yes.
Where they got in a president who was actually, you know, working on behalf of the communists. If we had a Manchurian Candidate president, it seems to me that the things that he would want to do to destroy the United States would be things like run us into debt, run us into the greatest deficit we've ever had, make us hated by the world, weaken our military by getting us bogged down in a horrific war in a part of the world that there was really no reason for us to have a war there, lie to the American people and diminish their confidence, attack the institutions of government relentlessly, rhetorically, so that people would lose confidence in their government, diminish and weaken the infrastructural institutions of government, such as schools, roads, and so on. I mean, it just seems like if you wanted to destroy this country, the things that you would do would be what the Bush administration has been doing. Now, I can't believe that George Bush came into office saying, gee, I think I'll ruin America. What is, I mean, you work with these guys side by side. You know them. What is their rationale for this kind of behavior?
Well, I don't think for a second that anybody on the other side wants to harm America. But I do think this. History shows that when people believe they are the only people who know the truth and they know the absolute truth, and they can impose that on others without listening to other opinions, that the net result is often the same. You mentioned it, Tom. We have the largest deficits in the history of the country. The debt now is almost $8 trillion. The individual debt, each person in America owes $26,000. We have the largest deficits in history. And you know, when the administration says they've cut the deficit in half, they really haven't. That's half of an inflated estimate that they gave, and it's only been cut recently, partly because of one-time tax cuts that can't be sustained. So we've got this huge deficit. Our forces are extended internationally. We've put tremendous amounts of our national security infrastructure in Baghdad, leaving other areas basically unaddressed by intelligence and military operations. And our soldiers, Frank, they're exhausted, and world opinion is no longer as solidly American. We took global sympathy, an outpouring of compassion post 9/11, and somehow in a very brief period turned that around. And that's a remarkable and sad achievement.
We really and truly had the world with us.
Oh, absolutely. People around the world, Islamic countries, people in Iran were holding candles up in sympathy to us. And now what we've done is reverse that. And, you know, everybody in America supports the soldiers. We support their families. And we supported the war on terror in Afghanistan. That's where the terrorists were training. They came from Saudi Arabia and a couple other countries. But we did not have to go into Iraq in the way we did go into Iraq. And that has harmed our country. It's harmed our soldiers, most importantly. It's harmed their families. It's harmed the Iraqi people, the civilians and others who've been killed there. But it's also harmed us economically. When we look at these deficits, in large part, it's a combination of tax cuts plus a war.
Our number 1-866-889-8894. Bill in Salt Lake City, Utah, on the line. Hey, Bill, you're live with Congressman Brian Barrett of Washington State.
Hi there. Good to be on your show. I was just curious, on these Sunday talk shows yesterday, there were some comments by some of the people that, you know, we certainly didn't want to appear as though we had planned on staying there for any length of time, or that we had plans on staying there any longer than we needed to. But that doesn't jive. It seems to me I've heard, maybe they're just rumors, but that we were actually constructing some bases or something along some sort of a pipeline over there. Is there any truth to that, or was that floated out there and then it was kind of dismissed, or what's the deal on that?
Well, it's always good to hear from someone in Salt Lake. I'm a Utah graduate myself. So, you know, here's the thing, is we seem to be speaking out of both sides of our mouth over there, and I think the people over there get it. On the one hand, we're saying, no, we won't be here forever. On the other hand, we're saying, but we're going to probably need 20 to 40,000 soldiers here for the next decade, possibly. In order to defend those soldiers and defend things like pipelines, we have constructed more or less permanent assets. Now, there's no question that you could eventually tear up a base. We're going to do that in our own country. But it certainly looks on the ground to the folks over there that we're planning to stay a while. It's as if a visitor came to your house and began moving stuff into your closets. You might say, is this a visit or are you staying for a while?
Mm-hmm.
Or as if they were building a shed out back that was looking suspiciously like a small house.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Glenn in Tulsa, Oklahoma on the line. Hey, Glenn, what's up?
Hi, Tom. I agree totally with, I forgot his name.
Congressman Brian Baird is with us from Washington State.
Okay. And when I hear these and when I move to action and I want to do something and I want others to do something, I'm basically stymied by the fact that it's not being covered in the major media and the consolidation and the problems that it's caused for real journalists doing real journalism work. As mentioned at freepress.net, for example, and how are we going to? I know there are people who care about this, but I think they don't know what they can do. They're frustrated.
You know, it's a great question. I'll tell you what I think we need to do. First of all, we need to arm ourselves with the information. And then, frankly, I think we need to reach out to the moderates. Those folks on the progressive side are already frustrated with this administration. But I'll tell you, I've talked to a lot of moderates who are very concerned as well. You ask a moderate Republican, are you comfortable with having the largest deficits in American history? Are you comfortable with the president who took us into war saying it would cost $100 billion and not take 100,000 troops? And in fact, we've lost almost 2,000 soldiers already. We've spent $300 billion. Are you comfortable with that? Ask them if they're comfortable that we've underfunded veterans' services to the tune of over $1 billion, almost $1.5 billion. We need to walk them through that and ask them to ask themselves if they're still comfortable with their party. Ask them if they're comfortable being a party of extremists like Tom DeLay and like Bill Frist, or would they like to see an alternative? And I think if we do that, there are a lot of folks out there who are saying, you know, the Republican Party's not speaking to me anymore, and the Democrats and the progressive side actually have a more positive vision for our country and the world.
Congressman Brian Baird, did you have any involvement with or John Conyers' efforts in Ohio to find out what happened there in the 2004 election?
Well, I didn't, but I will tell you this. I was the only member of the Congress who was not part of the Black Caucus to walk out on the vote count that year. I was the only white guy, basically, who stood up and walked out. Now, that was a tough decision, but I said to myself, do I think this election was fair and upfront? No, I did not. I believe that what happened in Florida was a disgrace and a threat to our democracy. And we were basically stymied by House and Senate rules because we couldn't get a Senate co-sponsor. And when those electoral votes got counted, the Black Caucus walked out in protest. And I said, is it only black people?
This was
people?
In the 2000 election.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Is it only black? I thought that's what you're asking about, Tom.
Yeah.
Is it only black people who care about making sure votes get counted? I don't think it should be. And so I walked out with them. I've supported Rush Holt's bill to make sure that we have, if we have electronic voting machines, which we're moving towards, that we have a paper trail. You've got to be able to go in and have a real, solid, tangible piece of information with which to check the electronics.
Okay, we have Frank in Phoenix. We've got a little less than a minute left. Frank, you're live with Congressman Brian Baird of Washington.
Hi there, nice to speak to you. I was just wondering if, how come the Democrats don't stand up to this administration like Howard Dean does? How come they don't, the Democrats back away from Howard Dean instead of standing beside him and call this administration liars and all these Republicans liars and things like that?
Good question.
Well,
Frank,
a lot of Democrats do. I want you to know on the war and on a host of other things, not all Democrats voted against it, but many of us did, and we led the fight for an alternative resolution. The challenge is the president has the bully pulpit and the press buy into it. We need to understand that on the floor of the House, through a host of alternative resolutions, et cetera, the Democrats are leading the way. We've got a better plan on national security. We've got better proposals on health care. We've got better proposals on education. The challenge is getting that message out, and that's frankly where you come in.
And well said. That's where we all come in. We've got each one of us has to get involved, get personally involved, get politically involved. Congressman Brian Baird of Washington State, thank you, sir, so much for being with us here live in the studio today.
My pleasure, Tom, and thanks to your callers.
I do appreciate it. And we will be back right after this. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, where our talking points come from Jefferson and Madison, not some right-wing think tank.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Now I can understand why you were hot, 'cause Bin Laden never did get caught.
Nah, somehow you missed him.
You said we had Saddam to blame, tried to tell us it was all the same. But now the years roll by and our kids keep dying. You don't even have a plan to bring them home. And those WMD you promised on TV, hey, admit it, you figured it wrong. So I'm taking my country back.
Yes, indeed. We're taking our country back, my friends. These right-wing cranks have had it long enough. And they've done enough damage. Oh, boy, have they done enough damage.
Now you don't know my name, but you know.
There There you go, and we're taking our country back. Welcome back, my friends. 25 minutes past the hour. I'm Tom Hartman, 1-866-889-8894. And speaking of when it all began, Barbara Honegger worked in the Reagan White House. She wrote a book called October Surprise. We actually had a contest last year, gave away a copy of Barbara's book. I have quoted it so many times on this program, and I am so honored to have Barbara with us here and to talk about what happened back in 1979, 1980, and all the way up to today. This is going to be a fascinating conversation. I'm really looking forward to it. Barbara Honegger, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Hi, Tom. Can you hear me?
I can.
Oh, that's great.
Hear you just fine.
nice to meet you, Tom.
Great to have you here. We have about 2.5 minutes before we have to take a break at the bottom of the hour, and then we'll have a little more time, a little more elbow room to get into a more detailed discussion.
After the break.
Yeah, after the break. But just in short form,
yes.
And of course, if any of our callers have questions for you, they're welcome to call after the break as well. In short form, in the 2 minutes or so before we get into that, what happened in 1980 that caused Ronald Reagan to win and Jimmy Carter to lose that election?
All right. The bottom line, and this is now confirmed, we have absolute proof of it. I called it the October Surprise in my book by that same title published in 1989. The bottom line of the October Surprise is that the 1980 Reagan-Bush campaign, when Reagan was the candidate for president, and Bush Sr., the current president's father, was candidate for vice president, and William Casey, soon to be CIA director, was then campaign manager of the 1980 Reagan-Bush campaign. Back in October 1980, top officials from the Reagan-Bush campaign met with top representatives of the Ayatollah Khomeini's radical Islamist fundamentalist regime and cut a deal with them. The Reagan campaign emissary asked the Khomeini government, the new Islamic fundamentalist radical government, to not release the hostages, the 52 hostages, to Carter, which would have resulted in Carter's victory for sure. The Reagan-Bush campaign knew that from our own internal polls inside the campaign. And I was in the campaign at that time, in the Reagan campaign, so I knew from the inside. So they asked the Khomeini regime, through a man by the name of Bassem Abu Sharif, who was a top aide to PLO head Yasser Arafat at the time. And we need to talk about Bassem Abu Sharif after the break because he's critically important. He's the link that takes us all the way to 9/11 from the October Surprise. And so we know now, we have absolute proof, because believe it or not, the October Surprise before the last election in 2004, Bassem Abu Sharif went public in late October of last year, 2004, and told the world the name that he had been withholding for over 10 years. He told the world the name of the top Reagan-Bush campaign, 1980 campaign emissary, who asked the Khomeini regime to delay the release of the hostages to ensure the Reagan-Bush victory and Carter's defeat, i.e. the October Surprise. He named that man, and he named him, and his name is John Shaheen. And John Shaheen was Ronald Reagan's buddy from when they were kids back in Dixon, Illinois.
And is John Shaheen still around?
John Shaheen has died.
So.
But we have John Shaheen's diaries from that period of time. Der Spiegel magazine out of Germany.
Yeah.
Der Spiegel actually purchased John Shaheen's diaries, which confirm much of this. So we don't just have Bassem Abu Sharif, a master terrorist, word for it. We also have the word of John Shaheen himself in his own personal diary.
In his own handwriting.
Yes.
Amazing. So you've been vindicated.
Absolutely.
And I want to find out from you, by the way, what happened to your book, because I bought your book in an airport bookstore, and a month later, it seemed to have vanished in the face of the earth. I got a lot of questions for you. Barbara Honegger is with us, the author of October Surprise, and one of a great patriot, 29 minutes past the hour.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
The fact is that they tell you lies that get different names, like collateral damage. The fact is that the dead, they all had different plans. They all had names and faces, hopes and dreams.
And a little later on today, you'll be hearing from Cindy Sheehan. I interviewed her just a short while ago. We'll play that interview on the program as we move on through the 3 hours of our program today. Welcome back. I'm Tom Hartman. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, the pill that will help you escape the matrix. We're talking with Barbara Honegger, the author of October Surprise. Barbara, I told the story. I bought your book in an airport bookstore. I thought, well, this looks interesting. I sat on an airplane. I read it. My jaw fell open. A month or so later, I went looking for copies of it. Not only had the book vanished, but when I tried to find the publisher had vanished. And I concocted this whole conspiracy theory in my mind that the CIA must have bought it out and put it out of business, or the Bush family or something. What happened?
Well, that's a very good question. Yes, my book, October Surprise, was published on May 12th of 1989, and the publisher, Tudor Press, which was a publisher whose U.S. office, in any case, was out of Los Angeles, they originally published between 40 and 50,000 copies, which is a huge number for a first printing on
yes.
a hardback book.
Yes.
And believe it or not, Tom, I'm not sure you're aware of this, but my book was the book of the month in Walden bookstores, all 1,000 Walden bookstores across the country. I had book signings in Walden bookstores across the country, and there were pyramids of my books at the front of every Walden bookstore across the country, and there were huge posters of my book in the window. And it sold for about 2.5, 3 weeks, maybe a month. And then the what I was told is that somebody, and I believe this was the Bush senior then administration, because they were in power then, someone, I was told, tried to buy out the entire company and buy back all the books and called the bookstores who had the books, all the Walden books and others, and told them, and this is unprecedented, not just to destroy the books or return them, but to rip the covers off of them.
Wow. And they did?
That's what I'm told. I heard that on, there was, Bob Perry, as you know, wrote a book on October Surprise confirming it called Trick or Treason, the October Surprise Mystery, which I also recommend to people in addition to my book, October Surprise. And I heard him on the radio out of, I believe it was Colorado or Las Vegas. And I have the tape in which a caller called in who was a bookstore owner and told that story. He said never in his experience had he ever seen that kind of top-down forced censorship of a book. And you know why, Tom? It's because it's true.
Yeah, and it's because what your book did, I mean, you were inside the Reagan administration, inside the Reagan campaign. The photo of you on the back cover has George Bush on one side and Ronald Reagan on the other side shaking hands with you.
In the cabinet room.
Yeah, in the and your book basically suggested, although I don't believe that you used these words, perhaps you did, it's been a few years since I read your book, but your book essentially suggested that the Reagan-Bush administration committed treason.
Well, the Reagan-Bush campaign, when they did not yet have the authority to interfere with President Carter's negotiations to get the hostages released early, yes, that they committed high treason. And what's another amazing fact is that, and most people don't realize this, but Bassem Abu Sharif, who is the man who went public last October 2004, and named the Reagan-Bush, 1980 Reagan-Bush emissary, who on behalf of Ronald Reagan and George Bush Sr., asked the Khomeini regime not to release the hostages to defeat Carter and ensure their White House victory, that man, Bassem Abu Sharif, was the man who personally trained the hostages, the hostage takers, the students, the Iranian students who took the hostages, to the extent that the Iranian students themselves who were holding our hostages in the U.S. Embassy in Iran and elsewhere in Iran when they were scattered to other places, they actually called themselves, the Iranian students, the Abu Sharif Brigade. And Abu Sharif is the man who not only effectively controlled the students, who controlled the hostages, but this is really important, Tom. Right now, as you know, the just elected and just empowered new president of Iran, he was one of the masterminds over the students who held the hostages. So he basically worked with Abu Sharif.
So even though, although he denies that, does he not?
He denies it, but he's lying, and I know he's lying because Chuck Scott, you can read about Chuck Scott in the back of my book. Chuck Scott is a dear colleague and friend. Chuck Scott was one of the 52 hostages, and he and other of the hostages, Mr. McDougherty and others, remember the current president of Iran, just elected president of Iran, personally. It is seared and burned into their memory, his voice and his image. Don't forget that this administration is playing a trick, like the trick they played with the so-called Swift boat veteran thing.
Mm-hmm.
The trick that this administration is playing is they put out this famous image of these two Iranian student hostage takers and this one American hostage in Tehran with the blindfold on his face. And then they sent that photograph to the CIA, and the CIA said, yeah, it looks a lot like the new president of Iran, but we really don't think so. Well, that's a red herring. That's a false flag, because they knew the guy from the beginning wasn't that person. So what matters is the current president, whether he was in that photo or not, one of the leaders of the hostages who took our hostages?
Well, here's where it gets really convoluted, because the Bush administration... and now we're hearing, we read in Pat Buchanan's American Conservative Magazine, of all places, that the Bush administration has charged the United States Air Force with preparing a nuclear strike against Iran in the event of any sort of 9/11 type strike in the United States, whether Iran has anything to do with it whatsoever or not.
Yes, that they want. But Cheney ordered STRATCOM to do that. That's the report.
Yeah, exactly. Cheney ordered STRATCOM to do that, and so. If what you're saying is right, that the current president of Iran actually had something to do with the hostage taking, doesn't that kind of play into the right-wingers' hands?
Of course. Right from the beginning, that's the whole point of the October surprise, that the right-wing radical Islamist fundamentalists need the right-wing radical Christian fundamentalists in the United States. They need to perpetuate their agendas and create theocratic fascist states in their two countries.
So the theocratic fascists here, the Falwells, the Robertsons, the Tony Perkinses, the George W. Bushes, the theocratic fascists here need there to be theocratic fascists there. They feed off each other.
They feed off,
to have a mutual enemy to keep the people terrified.
They feed off each other just as the right wing in Israel needs the radical Hezbollah and Islamic Jihad to do their terrorist attacks in order to justify their fascist actions.
You know, this is an old story, Barbara. When I lived in Europe, we would learn the history of the local castle of the local town. And for hundreds and hundreds of years, you'd have one town and their castle, which was, of course, the local lord. This is during the feudal era,
right?
F-E-U-D-A-L. During that time, you would have one town fighting against another town for generations.
Yes.
And the local lords were encouraged to have these low-level conflicts when, in fact, they were actually friends. But they maintained these low-level wars so that the serfs, the peasants, would build their castles bigger and bigger and bigger in case the war ever got really hot. They would have a castle that they could, everybody could go hide in.
Yeah.
And
the civilians, the so-called low-level ordinary civilians, were cannon fodder for both of them.
Right. Yeah. And it's all over again. It's happening all over again. So we had high treason committed by Reagan and Bush during the Jimmy Carter presidency.
No. Yes, correct. During the campaign, when Carter was still in power. Yes.
Right. During the Jimmy Carter presidency, in order to win a campaign.
They would do anything, including delaying the release and extending the captivity of our 52 hostages for an additional 150 days or so.
Yeah. And then immediately, of course, they had to pay back the Iranians. And so they started selling them weapons. And you point out in your book that we were selling arms, the arms for hostages deal. The hostages were released the moment, literally the moment, Ronald Reagan put his hand on the Bible in January of 1981.
Correct.
To be sworn in as president.
Correct.
They released the hostages. And soon thereafter, we began selling routing through Israel, I guess it was, but selling to them these missiles and spare parts, and there were no hostages being held anywhere in the world.
That is correct.
Why has no member of Congress ever said, hey, wait a minute, why were you guys giving missiles and spare parts to Iran in exchange for hostages when they weren't holding any hostages?
Well, they have. And as you know, Tom, as a result of my book, and then after my book was published in 1989, then Gary Sick, I really had a one-person audience for my book, and that was Captain Gary Sick, former Navy intelligence, who had been Jimmy Carter's, President Carter's, top Iran expert in Carter's White House National Security Council throughout the hostage crisis. He got an advanced copy of my book. He went, Jesus Christ. He spent about 3 years on his own revisiting the whole territory, redoing the research, came up with effectively the same conclusion, published a book by the same title as mine called October Surprise 3 years later in 1992, which, because Gary Sick was an inside the Beltway, inside Washington insider, people paid attention. And as a result of Gary Sick's book, we had a full subpoena power congressional investigation that was passed by an act of the House of Representatives, and that in turn resulted in a government printing office report of the House October Surprise Task Force. And here's the clincher. And this I hope will get us into 9/11, which I want to get some critical information out to your listeners. The man who was put in charge, and don't forget that the Democrats were in charge of the House at the time, the man who was put in charge of the House October Surprise Task Force to investigate the October Surprise officially in Congress was none other than our wonderful Lee Hamilton. And Lee Hamilton, of course, was the co-chairman of the just-passed Keene Commission, which was the Keene Commission report is a 571-page lie.
So he's demonstrated his ability to whitewash. They brought him back.
He not only demonstrated personally his ability to whitewash, but Lee Hamilton is the man more than anyone else on the planet who was personally responsible for covering up the fact of high treason by the Republicans, by the so-called loyal opposition.
But Lee Hamilton was a Democrat.
That is correct. But Lee Hamilton has actually stated publicly that when it comes to national security, there are so-called, he believes, and he's wrong, there are so-called higher goals than telling the truth.
Interesting. Now, Barbara, Gus in Seattle's on the line. He thinks that you're nuts here. Do you mind taking a call?
Yeah, you know, this is the most ridiculous paranoid theory I have ever heard in my life. I can't believe that you
okay,
wrote
Okay, Gus,
book
give me some,
public.
Give me some.
Let's have a question here.
Give me.
Well, okay. Yeah. All right. Well, the question is, explain to me why. I'll tell you what. My theory is that the reason why they were released on the day that Reagan was appointed was because they knew that Reagan had already said in his campaign that he wasn't going to allow this nonsense to go any further. And so they, by releasing him, they avoided a nuclear strike or a bomb strike or whatever.
So you think it was because Reagan was just so tough?
Let me
okay. Go ahead, Barbara.
Let me answer that question. First off, this is not a ridiculous theory. It's not a theory at all. It has been proven. And for all of you listeners who still have an open mind, unlike this last caller, I would recommend that you go to a website called Consortium News. I believe it's .com. It's Bob Perry's website.
Mm-hmm.
And Bob Perry was a top reporter for both Newsweek and UPI who investigated the October Surprise, came to the same conclusion, published his own book called Trick or Treat, The October Surprise Mystery. I recommend that book to you also. Go to his website. I think it's called consortiumnews.com. In any case, Google consortium, C-O-N-S-O-R-T-I-U-M, and when you get to his website, click on the October Surprise X-Files, and you will see the actual documents, the formerly classified documents that were leaked out by someone with integrity inside the House October Surprise Task Force after Lee Hamilton had them classified and locked away forever because they proved the October Surprise. You will see them there. These are official documents.
Yeah, it's consortiumnews.com. Yeah. Now, William Casey was the campaign manager for the Reagan-Bush campaign. When you were working in the Bush, in the Reagan-Bush campaign, and then later you worked in the Reagan-Bush White House.
Correct.
And were a good Republican. And William Casey became then the director of the CIA.
Correct.
William Casey was going to be brought before Congress to testify under oath about his knowledge of and participation in cutting this deal with Iran to hold the hostages so that Reagan could win the campaign and Carter would lose. And that very morning, just about 4 hours before he was supposed to testify, suddenly
he happened to have a brain seizure just in his speech center.
Right. He falls down on the floor. They take him to Walter Reed. They open him up, and they remove the part of his brain that controls speech. Isn't this a high-tech version of the old mafia thing of cut out their tongue if they're going to talk?
Yes.
Am I being paranoid?
No, but the question that fact begs, and you can read about that in my book, October Surprise, the question that the fact that William Casey told one of his best friends the day before he was going to testify to the Senate Iran-Contra hearings, he told his best friend that he was going to come clean. Casey knew that he was old and that he was sick. He told him he was going to come clean and tell the truth. Either that night or the next morning, Casey has a brain seizure and is rushed to the hospital, and guess what, folks? It's just the speech center of his brain. He is rendered speechless, literally, and of course can't testify, and shortly after that dies. So the question that begs is, who really controls the show if there are those over the director of the Central Intelligence Agency that can take out the director of the Central Intelligence Agency with that kind of targeted specificity.
Yeah. Fred in Oklahoma driving a truck has some thoughts on this. Hey, Fred.
Hi. Yeah, I was listening to that other idiot that just called a Republican.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, you could tell if the sun could go down in a Republican square, the sun was still up.
That's
right. George Bush,
I'm not
sorry
sure
about
that.
I just dumped him. He dropped an obscenity on the line there, and I dumped it off. So anyhow,
Hey Tom, yeah. What I would appreciate doing if we could kind of move into 9/11.
Sure.
Because Barbara, there is a link.
Yeah, there is a link. And Barbara, we're going to have to take a break here in about 15 seconds,
okay.
and then we'll just have a couple of minutes at the top of the hour. If you could take
good.
A couple of callers, and then perhaps you can stay over the top of the hour, and we can talk for a few minutes after that. Are you available?
Sure. That's
okay,
fine.
I haven't done that in over a year and a half. I haven't had a guest on that I would carry over into the second hour, but I think this is really important stuff. You've got some marvelous information, and I want to get it out there. And I thank our last caller for his sentiment. It's just the FCC rules, you can't get obscene on the air. Sorry about that. Life in the big city, right? Okay, we got to take a break. We're talking with Barbara Honegger, the author of October Surprise. And we'll be right back. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
Marine Corps families here in the suburb of Cleveland had already started a makeshift memorial for the Marines killed Monday when word came more died today.
Insurgents and George Bush coming. Hey, soldiers, you're on your own. This summer, Marines are dying. 14 from Ohio. Gotta get down to it. Soldiers are losing their lives. Should have been home long ago.
In Toronto, Ohio, flags in sorrow line.
Dad, do you know?
The commanders there are doing their very best to understand it. Believe me, they're as interested as you in understanding.
Insurgents and George Bush coming. Hey, soldiers, you're on your own. This summer, Marines are dying. 14 from Ohio.
Initial reports are that 15 personnel were killed in the attack.
Get them out of there. I don't know how we can get them out of there. Get them out of there.
At Janice Lieber with ChoppedLiverProductions.com. Welcome back. Thank you, Janice, for that. We're talking with Barbara Honegger of October Surprise fame, author of the book October Surprise. And Barbara, for our listeners who might be looking for a copy of your book, about the only place I could find them was on ABEbooks.com. Are there other sources for used books that you recommend?
Oh, that's very interesting. I actually checked, I believe it was, Amazon.com recently, and my books there.
Oh,
but
great.
I do recommend ABE.com over Amazon for rare and out-of-print books, yes.
Yeah.
And it is available at ABE.com. And for anybody who still can't get it there, you can call me. I've got a stash of them.
Oh, okay. Okay, fine. So you just drop a note. I don't want to put your home phone number here out in the air, but if people get a hold of us, or perhaps you can participate, get on our message board and let people know. I want to get a couple more from you, in fact. I've had a couple over the years, and I end up giving them all. I have one. I've got one sacred copy at home, the original one.
Brian, well, I'll tell you, Tom, next time I'm up in Portland, which I am periodically because I have family up there, I'll give you a call. Maybe we can be on this show again, and I'll sign your book.
Oh, that would be great. That would be a real honor. And in fact, I want to get you on our local show as well. We're just out of time for this segment, but you can stay over for another 20 minutes or so here, Barbara.
Yes. So you're going to call me back, or you want me to stay on the phone?
If you don't mind just hanging on the line, that's fine.
Then we'll talk about 9/11 and the link to Iran.
9/11 and the links to Iran. That should be fascinating. And we're talking with Barbara Honegger, the author of October Surprise. She was an insider in the Reagan-Bush administration, insider in the Reagan White House. What Iran-Contra was really all about, the act of treason by George Bush Sr. and Ronald Reagan to steal an election from Jimmy Carter that began the Reagan Revolution, that began the beginning, it was the beginning of the end of the American middle class, and led directly to George W. Bush. We'll be back with more of that after the news at the top of the hour. I'm Tom Hartman.
You You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information. Rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. We're going to be hearing from Cindy Sheehan a little later in the program. She's down in Texas. I understand from the folks in the chat room, one of them has been in talking with her. I spoke with her on the phone about it 2 hours ago, about an hour and a half ago. And at that time, you know, all was well. But I understand that starting Thursday, the Bush administration is going to declare her a threat to national security and arrest her. She, the mother of Casey Sheehan, who died in Iraq, she's one of the founders of Gold Star Families for Peace. We'll keep you up to date on that and perhaps even have Scott try and track her down, get her back on the air here. If not, I've got an audio clip, a 9-minute clip of my interview with her on the AM 620 KPOJ here in Portland that I can play. In the meantime, we're speaking with Barbara Honegger. Barbara is the author of October Surprise, a brilliant book. I want to get into more details and questions about it. Barbara, first, let's just take a couple quick calls here.
All right.
And then we can get back to how does this tie into 9/11. I'm also curious about, you said Ollie North said that he had a license to kill, and you've got a list here, the epilogue, Kinder, Gentler America, where you have a list of all the people who died as a result of their affiliation with the Bush-Reagan campaign and their knowledge of this, and I want to get into that. But
yeah.
First, I know we've got a bunch of listeners who've been very patiently sitting on hold, some of them for, you know, nearly an hour here just to speak with you, so let's get to them. Dave in Allentown, Pennsylvania on the line. Hey, Dave, you're live with Barbara Honegger.
Hi, Barbara. First of all, I just want to salute you, but actually I was on hold to listen to the rest of your interview because I lost my connection with Sirius. So, I salute you. I really don't have a question at this time.
Okay.
I wish you the very best. I just wanted to hear the rest of your interview, and
okay.
I was on hold to do that. So.
Dave, I'll put you back on hold then. Brian in Manchester, New Hampshire on the line. Hey, Brian.
Hi. I had to call in to respond, Tom, to that there was a right-wing caller. I guess you had to cut him off for he was using some kind of profanity.
Actually, it was the right-wing caller said, "Oh, this is all nonsense." And Barbara said, "Go to consortiumnews.com and check on and click on the October Surprise X Files, which I have up on my computer right now." And she's right; it's all right there.
Yeah.
And then another guy called up to defend her, but he was so upset that he let go with a curse word, and I had to bleep him. So
I'm not going to do that.
He was upset at the other caller.
Right? He wasn't upset with Barbara. He was in defense of Barbara. So anyway, what can you say?
As they say with friends like these, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, Howard Stern is pro-free speech, too, and so you can't always have your favorite people on your side, but I'm for his free speech as well. Barbara, I just wanted to offend you, though. I think that people that think that they couldn't do this kind of thing, I'm a former Marine. I knew that many of the 243 Marines killed on October 24th, 1983,
yes.
by the Hezbollah Iranian officer, an Iranian-funded, Iranian-backed Hezbollah.
Yes, it was, backed
group.
By Iran.
Yes, and and what does Ronald Reagan do? Our super patriot president then does the Iran-Contra deal, et cetera, selling all these tons of missiles and weapons of mass destruction, in effect, to Iran, the Iranian mullahs. And these are
the terrorists who had killed our people, yes.
This is in violation of the import-export laws and other laws that are basically in violation of the trading with the enemy laws regarding countries like North Korea, Cuba, and Iran. It's disgusting that these Republicans keep getting away with this. There's so many scandals. One of the people now is named intelligence czar Negroponte, was involved in Iran-Contra. You get rewarded by this administration for doing these kinds of things.
So, Brian, is there a question in there for Barbara?
Yes, there is. Yes, there is. I want you to get to the 911 report and that kind of thing, but I'm wondering, you see a link with Iran regarding 911, but is it something that it's going to be used by as a pretext for invading Iran by this administration?
Okay. I think I'm going to, if it's all right, Tom, use the caller's question as a bridge to get into critical information about September 11th that I think your listeners
need
to know.
Yeah.
Okay? All right. look, the bottom line of whether the truth will be used by this administration to attack any other nation is beyond my control, sir. But all I can do is tell you the truth. And the truth is that from all of my research, and ever since 9/11, just like I did with the October surprise and the release of the hostages the moment Reagan raised his hand to take the oath of office on January 20th, 1981, I knew that there was something fishy there, and I followed it up for over 10 years and published my book, October Surprise. The moment that 9/11 happened, the moment the official story of 9/11, that 19 hijackers were controlled by a guy on a kidney dialysis machine in a cave with box cutters, that's absurd. And so I knew that there was something not just fishy but insane about the government's official conspiracy theory of September 11th. And I've been following that up every single day of my life since. And I'm here to tell you that it is my informed opinion, and I'm going to tell you why here in a moment, that there was a state sponsor behind 9/11, and that state sponsor was Iran. And I
now, again, Barbara, aren't you playing in by saying that? That's the kind of thing that I think that the right-wingers would just love to have you come on the Chris Matthews show and say, because it's going to encourage George Bush to go attack Iran and have another war.
Look, again, what I need to have people realize is the facts.
Mm-hmm.
And what people in power do with the
facts...
Let
the chips fall where they may. The truth is the truth.
Yes. I mean, you wouldn't want me not to tell you the truth.
Right.
Right. Okay. So here's the bottom line. The bottom line is I want to very quickly take you in a seamless historical line from the 1979 to 80 hostage crisis and the October surprise directly to 9/11.
Okay.
Bassem Abu Sharif was the man who personally trained. He was a top aide to Yasser Arafat of the PLO. He personally trained and led the trainers of the Iranian students who took our originally 67, then they let 12 or 13 or 14 of them go. So everybody knows about the 52 American hostages. That was what we ended up with at the end, 52 hostages.
In 1980.
In 1979 and 1980. They were taken on November 4th, 1979. So Bassem Abu Sharif was the man who was the mastermind behind the taking of our hostages to begin with. And we know that that Ronald Reagan and George Bush Sr., back in October 1980, personally sent Reagan's childhood friend, John Shaheen, to personally meet with Bassem Abu Sharif to ask Abu Sharif to get Yasser Arafat, to get Khomeini, to delay the release of the hostages. That is now historical fact. Okay. Now, what people don't realize, most people don't realize, is that Bassem Abu Sharif was in the same terrorist cell, the man who was the mastermind of the hostage crisis to begin with. He was in the personal terrorist cell with the number one terrorist, except for bin Laden, in history, Carlos the Jackal. Abu Sharif and Carlos the Jackal were in the same terrorist cell, in the same trenches, in the Black September operation way back in the 70s against the then King of Jordan.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now, why does that matter? Carlos the Jackal, when bin Laden went to Sudan, bin Laden was kicked out of Saudi Arabia and went to Sudan in the mid-1990s, he was there at the same time as Carlos the Jackal. And Carlos the Jackal has publicly stated, you have the quote, Tom, I sent it to you. Carlos the Jackal has publicly stated that he, Carlos's personal terror network, which is Bassem Sharif's terrorist network, which is the terrorist network that took the hostages, Carlos the Jackal has stated publicly that Osama bin Laden in Sudan inherited his, Carlos the Jackal's, and Abu Sharif's worldwide terrorist network. I believe that is al-Qaeda.
Hmm.
Okay? So, now, what is the link, then, between all of this, between Iran and the October surprise, the man who took the hostages, Abu Sharif, whose personal terrorist cell member was Carlos the Jackal, who he and Abu Sharif gave his entire network over to Osama bin Laden in Sudan just before Osama bin Laden went to Afghanistan and used that terrorist network of Bassem Abu Sharif of the original Iran hostage crisis. Why does this matter? I refer people to a book called Countdown to Crisis by Timmerman. The bottom line critical fact in that book is that the Keene Commission, was given in the last week that they were in business before they closed down about a year ago.
Now, this was the commission looking into 9/11.
Absolutely.
With Lee Hamilton and number two in charge.
And Thomas Keene,
right.
Yes. The Keene Commission was given an official U.S. government document. Somebody leaked the truth to the Keene Commission about a week before it closed its doors, about a year ago, laying out all of the evidence that Iran was the state sponsor of 9/11. And what is the direct link? The direct link is that Osama bin Laden's number two man, the Egyptian terrorist, Islamic Jihad, Egyptian Islamic Jihad terrorist leader, al-Zawahiri. Al-Zawahiri met personally for years, not only with bin Laden, but coordinated personally in Tehran with the leadership of the very people who took our hostages to begin with Bassem Abu Sharif's network, and of course his network now runs Iran.
Now, what about the fact that Osama bin Laden and al-Zawahiri, his mentor, the pediatrician who was the student of the guy who started the Islamic Brotherhood
exactly.
and who helped assassinate Sadat
in Egypt, yes.
Yeah, in Egypt, I'm forgetting his name, but he had been in St. Louis, Missouri at the same time Leo Strauss was teaching in Chicago. They both, you know, the al-Qaeda and the modern neocons both emerged at about the same time in the 1960s. That they are all Sunni Arabs and Iran is all Shia Arabs and they're traditionally enemies. And you're suggesting that these guys are working together. Something doesn't connect here for me.
Not only suggesting that they work together, but they have worked together. They did work together. And I just refer you, Tom, you need to read Countdown to Crisis.
Yeah, and the Iranians are not even Arabs, by the way. You know, they not only are of a different religion in Islam, but they also, you know, tend to look down on the Arabs because they're not Arabs.
But the bottom line, just I refer you to the book. Read the book and then let's talk again. Because the bottom line is, and by the way, I already knew what was in the book, okay?
Well, can you just give me a one-sentence summary of what's in the book or a, you know, one-minute summary?
Yes, the bottom line of the book is proving that what you just said is false, and that this concept, this conventional wisdom concept, that the Sunnis terrorists wouldn't work with the Shiite terrorists against the United States and Israel, is simply false, and the book proves it.
So it comes back to the old Middle Eastern saying of the enemy of my enemy is my friend.
Exactly. And that was exactly the argument that al-Zawahiri made to the Iranians long before 9/11, and it's a jaw-dropping book.
So in a way, you could say, or correct me if I'm wrong, let me just put this out and you tell me whether this is nuts or not. We have about a half a minute left
sure.
here before we have to take a break,
sure.
But we'll come back. You could say that the act of treason that Bush and Reagan committed in order to defeat Jimmy Carter and getting in bed with the Iranians,
yes.
Had that not happened, then 9/11 may not have happened.
Absolutely. There is an absolute seamless historical link back.
And that Lee Hamilton knew that.
Lee Hamilton was the man, more than any other person on earth, who covered up the truth about the Republican treason of October Surprise, which was the original sin in which the Republicans started working behind the scenes treasonously with the Islamic radical fundamentalist regime of the planet.
And Lee Hamilton covered it up because he thought there are some things that's just better for Americans not to know.
Not to know.
Yeah.
Correct.
Fascinating. We're talking with Barbara Honegger. Can you stick around for another 5-10 minutes here, Barbara?
Sure, absolutely.
Okay, we've got a 4-minute break here. We'll have 5 minutes. I also have a bunch of calls for you still that we haven't finished getting through. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, 20 minutes past the hour. We're talking with Barbara Honegger, the author of October Surprise.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. 25 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. We're talking with Barbara Honegger. First of all, Barbara, we got to get your book, October Surprise, back in print.
Oh, good idea.
You know, send me an email and remind me, and let me put you in touch with my agent. He's good at that kind of thing, and there are publishers out there who I think would be very interested in this, particularly if you updated it with some of this new information.
Absolutely. We need to update it and link it to 9/11.
Yep. Okay. We have about 4 minutes here, and then we got to wrap this up. Gary in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania is on the line. Gary, you're live with Barbara Honegger.
Hello, Tom. Miss Connable, is it?
Honegger.
Honegger.
Honegger, I'm sorry.
Uh-huh.
Forgive me. In your opinion, ma'am, it was the Ronald Reagan and George Bush presidencies. The bottom line is that their deep philosophy, they're so hell bent on their philosophy of winning, if you will. And do you think that's what drove these men to have these positions about war and so on? In your opinion, you think this is what's driving this administration right through?
All right. Well, if your question is about the current administration, is it?
Well, related to his father.
Yes.
And the whole philosophy.
Was this all
right?
Winning for winning's sake, or were these guys do this to win because they believed in their philosophy?
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Right. Is this who they are?
I can answer that question, and I know it from the inside. I was on the inside of the 1980 Reagan-Bush campaign, at the very top of the transition, and then in the White House for 2.5 years right over the Oval Office. So I was there. And I can tell you that the answer is both. They have a world agenda, and they are willing to do anything to get and maintain the power to achieve it. That's the bottom line. The most dangerous aspect of their agenda, which I can't say that they believe it, but they push it, let's put it that way. It is in their economic and geopolitical interest to say that they believe it, and that is this so-called federalism agenda, which are the new nominee to be Supreme Court Justice John Roberts is their point person for. And the whole concept was this. The bottom line of these people is they want to completely eliminate, and have pretexts and excuses to do so. They want to completely eliminate what we call the domestic side of the federal government, leaving only the military, the police, and the courts, basically their national security state, at the federal level, and they want to use the so-called new federalism or states' rights rubric and rhetoric.
Right. Do away with Medicare, do away with Medicaid, do away with education, do away with Social Security. Right, yeah, because they think it's all communism or socialism. They've been quite upfront about this, by the way. I mean, this is not a secret, Barbara.
No.
Bruce in Illinois in a truck. We've got about a minute and a half left here. Bruce, what's up?
Okay, yeah, thanks, Tom. Barbara, it's a pleasure. You're shining a bit of light into the darkness. I've been looking at a lot of the videos, like on World Trade Center collapses, and I wanted to ask you if you think it was actually just the planes that brought those down, or if there was something else going on, because I've looked at Building 7, and it was never touched by a plane or any of the other buildings, and it came down just like they did.
Yeah.
And
so glad for your question. I'd like to just briefly give a little context for people about 9/11, because maybe, Tom, we can have another show. We didn't get to really touch on 9/11.
Sure.
But here's the bottom line. You had a wonderful guest on your program, Congressman Baird, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
I listened to him.
Right.
There is only one thing that he said that I take huge exception to, and I'm sure that he believes it in all good faith, but it's just simply not factually correct. Where he said that the Bush administration ignored warnings before 9/11. The Bush administration did not ignore warnings. The Bush administration had the warnings, and the Bush administration chose not to act on the warnings. And the absolute 100% proof of that we have, and this is my major contribution to the 9/11 truth movement worldwide community, is that on the morning of 9/11 itself, a large sector of our entire military and intelligence and civilian government, and a large sector of the Bush administration, was actually doing a whole series of emergency response anti-terror drills, what I call war games, on the very scenarios of plane crashing into towers at the National Reconnaissance Office right outside of Washington, D.C.
Barbara, we have to wrap it up.
Okay.
Does that mean that they allowed 9/11 to happen?
They facilitated 9/11 to happen, absolutely. And, Tom,
We're out of time, Barbara. Thank you.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you. 27 minutes before the hour. Our telephone number, 1-866-889-8894. TomHartman.com is our website if you'd like to drop in. And assuming that I can make this computer work, which isn't always a safe assumption, this is an interview that I did with Cindy Sheehan about an hour and a half ago. And it's recorded, but it's still worth playing. Cindy Sheehan, who's one of the co-founders of Gold Star Families for Peace, whose son Casey died in Iraq 16 months ago. Cindy Sheehan. We have Cindy Sheehan with us. I want to hop right over to her. Mark, thank you very much for the call. Cindy is one of the founders of Gold Star Mothers for Peace. Is that right, Cindy?
Gold Star Families for Peace.
Gold Star Families for Peace. Thank you for correcting me. And you have been on our program before. I think with what you are doing is extraordinary. You lost your son, Casey, in Iraq. It's been about a year now, hasn't it?
It's been 16 months.
16 months. And
now she's in Texas, camped outside the ranch.
That's right. You are generating some headlines because you want to speak with George W. Bush. If you had an opportunity to speak with George W. Bush, what would you say to him?
I want to know what the noble causes my son has died for. You know, and you guys know and your listeners know that since April of 2004, the Downing Street memos have surfaced, the Dulfer report, the 9/11 commission report, and the Senate intelligence report that just proved categorically without a doubt that this war was based on lies. And my son shouldn't be dead. The 1,100 other children shouldn't be dead. Tens of thousands of innocent Iraqis should not be dead. And we're still allowing the carnage to continue. So I want to know, what is this noble cause? And number two, I want him to quit using my son's sacrifice to justify the continued killing. He keeps saying we have to honor the sacrifices of the fallen heroes.
By killing more.
Pardon me?
We have to honor those who are dead by killing more.
Right. And I'm like, I'm a mother. I had my heart ripped out and my soul ripped out on April 4th, 2004. Why would I want one more mother, American or Iraqi, to go through this? And Tom, I did meet with George Bush in June of 2004. And
what was that experience like?
It was terrible. And the right-wing media is using this against me because they think that, you know, something that happened in June of 2004 before all these reports came out and when my son had only been dead 2.5 months and I was in a deep state of shock and grief, they think that that has something to do with August of 2005 because the president told us at this meeting, I asked him, I said, what are we doing here? Why did we get invited? We did not vote for you in 2000. We're not going to vote for you in 2004. We've been lifelong Democrats. And he told me, Mom, this is not about politics. So after the meeting, my husband and I decided that we would not talk about the meeting in a negative light because we believed George W. Bush for some reason. I don't even know why we believed him. And so I did not talk negatively about it until August at the RNC when he said, I meet with the families. It was totally about politics because he doesn't go to their funerals.
Right.
You know, he was using our meeting for political gain, saying that, you know, we say we're all praying for him and we say that we don't want our loved ones' deaths to be in vain. You know what? I don't want Casey to die in vain. I want Casey's death to stand for bringing our troops home. That's how he can honor my son's death by not. And so now the right-wing media is saying, you know, well, you didn't talk badly about him when you had the chance right after you met him. You know, and so that what they're doing is they're putting up a smoke screen. They're trying to get the attention off the immorality and illegality of this war and of all the death and destruction he's caused by putting it on a grieving mother.
It's the old strategy of change the subject or kill the messenger. Cindy,
right.
Cindy Sheehan, I'm wondering what you think the answer to that question would be. There are some who are suggesting that George Bush took us into war for oil. There are others who are suggesting that he took us into war as part of a plan, the PNAC plan of global worldwide empire,
right.
That being the first step. And then there are those who are suggesting that the reason he did it is because he simply wanted to, the timing was all very, very carefully done so that in 2002, in the ginning up to the war, that the Republicans could take back the United States Senate, and then in 2004, he could get himself reelected. In other words, for political capital. What are your thoughts?
If he told me the truth, it would probably be a combination of all those things, you know, but he's going to try to spew the freedom and democracy and protecting America. That's what Stephen Hadley and Joe Hagan tried to tell me the other day when they came out to meet me.
What did they say?
They said that for freedom and democracy, and the president really believes is what we're doing over in Iraq is protecting America. And I told Steve Hadley and Joe Hagan, I said, you know what? Just because I'm a grieving mother, I'm not stupid. You know, I don't want him to tell me that because I know it's not true.
Please don't insult my intelligence. Yeah, pardon me.
And I looked at them and I said, and you don't look stupid either. And I don't believe that you really believe what you're telling me.
Ooh, how did they respond to that?
They raised their eyebrows. You know, they were trying to be very respectful and even-handed. You know, they came out to, they thought that they were going to intimidate me and impress me by who they sent out to speak with me. Mm-hmm. And I just said, you know what? This is a waste of time. And they said, you know, we didn't come out expecting to change our mind on policy. Well, they did. They expected that they were going to meet a grieving mother who was going to be intimidated and impressed by the National Security Advisor and the Deputy Chief of Staff. And I was not. You know, I was not impressed. And I'm not impressed by murderers, for one thing. And I just told them, this is a waste of time. I want to meet with the president. And I don't want the White House to send out anybody else. I just want to meet with the president.
We're talking.
And I'm going to stay in Crawford, Texas for the month of August or until he meets with me.
We're speaking with Cindy Sheehan, who lost her daughter, Casey, 16 months ago in the Iraq
War. Son.
Her son. I'm sorry. Thank you. yes. 16 months ago in the Iraq War. And, Cindy, I understand that, at least from the news reports I'm reading in the paper, that you and some of the folks who are supporting you are being harassed by the Secret Service?
We were the first day we were there under the guise of them, you know, looking out for our safety. They kept on coming and telling us, you know, if you stay here, chances are you're going to be hit by a car. And so we just said, finally, like one of us said, well, does that mean if we get hit by a car and killed that you did it?
And they said?
No, that's not what we're trying to say. And so when I heard that, I called up my contact because we don't have any Internet access yet. And I said, you got to get it all over the Internet that the Secret Service is trying to intimidate us into leaving.
Yeah.
And you got to tell everybody in America that if anything happens to us, it'll be the Secret Service that did it to us. And I just figured more people that knew that we were there and more people that knew what they were saying, the less chance of those things happening would be.
That message is getting out. Cindy Sheehan, is there a website that people can go to either, A, find out about what's going on? Are you blogging or messaging or is anybody with you? And, B, to support the work that you're doing?
We have right now, even though it's raining and we have our tents pitched in ditches and everything like that, we have about 25 people out there right now. We need more people. We need to show the media and this government that the people of America mean business when we say we want our troops home now. And we just got a new website out called meetwithcindy.org.
Meet with Cindy, C-I-N-D-Y, meetwithcindy.org. And one of the best things you're saying people can do is actually go down to Crawford, Texas and show up.
Show up and be here to show this president that we mean business, you know. And the conditions are harsh. We're going to the bathroom in 5-gallon buckets. We're camping in ditches. It's hot. If it's not blazing hot, it's pouring down rain. But you know what? Our message is our children in Iraq are going through so much more than we are. The people of Iraq are suffering way more than we are. And if they can do what we're doing, they're doing, we can stay out here for a month to call attention to the fact that this is a travesty, what's going on in Iraq.
Are you finding, I know that there was a newspaper in Crawford, Texas, that actually ran an editorial just before the election suggesting that people should vote for John Kerry, and that guy got run out of business. Are you finding generally that the people of Crawford, Texas have been cowed into supporting Bush or at least remaining completely neutral, that nobody's helping you out there?
Well, the Lone Star Iconoclast is still in business because what happened after that, the progressive community in the country all bought subscriptions because everybody canceled their ads. So he's got, like, tons of things. And he was blogging during the whole protest on Saturday, giving, like, updates to everybody. And they've been amazingly supportive. The people who live around Bush don't agree with us, but they haven't hassled us at all.
Oh, that's good. That's good.
Yeah.
Okay, so people can show up in Crawford, Texas. How do you get to Crawford, Texas? What's the nearest airport?
It's like halfway between Austin and Dallas, so whichever one.
So you could fly into either one and then just drive to Crawford. And how far is the drive?
Because anything we ask for, we get, you know. You don't have to bring anything. If we need camping equipment, we get it. If we need food or water, we get it.
Mm-hmm.
And people, the outpouring of support throughout the world has been amazing. I've gotten calls and emails from all over the world, people just saying, you know, don't give up. What you're doing is so right, and your son would be proud of you. And our
camp
is called Camp Casey,
mm-hmm.
and we're doing it to honor the sacrifices of the fallen, and the only way to honor them is to bring our troops home right now.
Yeah, I agree. Cindy Sheehan, you are so eloquent. You are such a heroine.
Thank you. You
are just truly one of our national treasures. Thank you so much for the extraordinary work you're doing, for the sacrifice your son made, and for the work that you're doing in his name. This is just a wonderful thing. Thank you so much. Cindy Sheehan. That was our interview earlier today with Cindy Sheehan of Gold Star Families for Peace. 1-866-889-8894, telephone number. And Ben Birch is with us from WhiteRoseSociety.org. Ben, you got some breaking news?
Yeah, this is just posted on Democratic Underground via David Swanson. It says, quote, Cindy Sheehan phoned me from Texas a few minutes ago to say that she's been informed that beginning Thursday, she and her companions will be considered a threat to national security and will be arrested. Coincidentally, Thursday is the day that Rice and Rumsfeld visit the ranch, and Friday is a fundraiser event for the haves and the have-mores. Cindy said that she and others plan to be arrested.
Wow. Yeah.
So
we're going to have her on the program tomorrow, by the way. Scott was talking to her on the phone just a few minutes ago, and we've scheduled her to be on this program in the first hour of the program tomorrow. So
I would remind people that under the Patriot Act, if you are arrested as a threat to national security, you don't have access to a lawyer.
Yeah, I mean, talk to Jose Padilla about that. You know, here's a guy who's been in jail for, what, 2.5-3 years now?
Correct.
And hasn't even yet had an opportunity to talk to his lawyer, can't talk to his family, can't post bail, can't have a hearing, nothing. And, yeah, okay. Ben, thank you.
You're very welcome.
Thank you. Grim news, but as we slide into a fascistic police state under the Bush administration, and, boy, it's hard to say that, you know. I mean, if 5 years ago somebody had said that to me, that that's where we'd be at, I would tell them that they'd been spending too much time reading John Birch Society literature. I mean, ironically, it's the right wing that has been warning about this and freaked out about this forever. But right across America now, I think people are starting to say, there's something very tragically wrong with the direction that this country is going in. And this is not the America that the founders envisioned. This is not the America that most of us grew up in. And it's not the America we want to leave to our children and grandchildren. We want an egalitarian nation that holds in high esteem and highly values the egalitarian ideals on which this nation was founded. Not a bunch of right-wing cranks, running a theocracy for the benefit of what Thomas Jefferson referred to as the well-born and well-bred. This should be a government of, by, and for all the people. David in Long Beach, in Santa Barbara, California on the line. Hey, David, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Hey, how you doing, Tom? I'm sorry. I've listened to your program in iTunes, and I think they're running the Friday show because you guys are talking about a different topic right now.
Ah!
But, yeah, I'm sorry about that. But
actually, I think, yeah, if you're listening in iTunes, you're getting the iPod thing, and they don't put that up until the show ends. And so, a half hour after we get off the air, then you'll hear today's show. But because can't do that. They can't create an MP3 file of the show until the show's over.
Actually, I'm listening through radiopower.org, and I think they're running Fridays. I'm not listening to the podcast, but I just wanted to call you regarding a caller on Friday and a comment you were talking about legal immigration and the problem with illegal immigration here in the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wanted to make the comment that you were saying illegal immigration, a big part of the problem is labor here in the U.S., and
mm-hmm.
I know that the labor organization is going down here in the U.S., but I just want to say that I, being from Mexico, I know firsthand the problem and what it is.
Okay.
And it's true what you were saying that 10 years ago, maybe 20 years ago,
there wasn't as much illegal immigration, but that was because there were good-paying jobs in Mexico. Now there are none. There are none. And you know why? They're coming over here because maquiladoras, U.S. corporations, go into Mexico with these huge contracts, and they pay workers $7 a day, you know?
Yeah, it's squat.
Squat. They cannot live off of it, you know? That's why they come over here.
So NAFTA, you're suggesting that NAFTA has so degraded the standard of living in Mexico that we've got desperate Mexicans coming to the United States looking for any kind of work they can get. Because the multinational corporations have ruined Mexico. And I'm saying that one of the reasons that they're coming to the United States is that multinational corporations have lowered the standard wage that, you know, basically it's an entry wage, it's an entry-level wage, and so it's easier for illegal immigrants to get the jobs because nobody's checking because the unions are gone. I suspect we're both right.
Exactly. And the problem here is not, this is not a human problem. I mean, these are people. Immigrants are people. And
this is not bad Mexicans or even bad Americans. This is bad policy.
This is bad money, you know, big money, and it's just a horrible problem. I just want to get that message out there, you know, because some people think Mexicans are part of the problem, and they're not. They're just trying to make a living. And,
I agree, and I've been saying the same thing all along, David. I absolutely agree with you. Thank you for that. That's a great contribution to the debate or the discussion. David in Santa Barbara, thanks so much for calling. I appreciate it. And thanks for listening to the program. It's 10 minutes before the hour. I'm Tom Harpin.
This is the Tom Harpin Program.
It's the Portergas song.
I'm not gonna tell you.
Welcome back, my friends.
I'm not gonna tell you. I'm not gonna.
Remember that Portergas came on national news? He says, "Yeah, we got a pretty good idea where Osama is. In fact, we're quite sure where he is." And then all of a sudden, Portergas wasn't on the news anymore. Old George called him up and said, "Porter." You just can't do that. You see, Osama is the brother of the guy that bailed out my failing business, Arbusto, and his family's in business with my daddy. And we just, you know, I mean, we've just got to, like, kind of, you know, lay low on this whole thing and just not talk about him anymore. I mean, you just can't talk too much about Osama bin Laden, because if you do, you know, it'll be a bad thing. In fact, you shouldn't even think about him that much.
So I don't know where he is. I just don't spend that much time on him. I'll be honest with you.
Yeah, you just can't even spend that much time with him, you know, because if you think about it too much, I mean, you know, you got a real problem. You might get fooled twice even. You know.
Saying in Tennessee, I know it's in Texas, probably in Tennessee, that says, "Fool me once, shame on you."
He cannot say "shame on me." It's not in his vocabulary.
You fool me, you can't get fooled again.
Yeah, fool me, you can't get fooled again. I'm sorry. I shouldn't laugh about it. In fact, let's instead just go to the official George W. Bush motto, and leave it at that.
If it feels good, do it. And if you got a problem, blame it on somebody else.
There you go. There you go. And have you ever heard this administration take the blame for anything? No, I didn't think so. Neither have I. 9/11? Nope. Crashing economy? Nope. Problems with Iran? No. North Korea? No. Everything's somebody else's fault. Oh, my. And on it goes, by the way. And on it goes. With the new energy bill, the wonders of the new energy bill.
Burn. Baby, burn.
That's a beautiful thing.
Yeah. And Enron, brought to you by... It's the Tom Hartman radio program. You're in the middle of a vast, radical middle conspiracy.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information. Covers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you, 7 minutes past the hour. Defending America from the conservative weapons of mass deception, the place where despair is not an option. Get active, my friends. We gotta win the water cooler wars and every other of the mental, emotional, the wars for the heart and soul of America, for reminding America and Americans what this country is all about, what this country was founded on, the founding ideals and notions and beliefs of this nation, that we can be a beacon of liberty to the world, and that we can provide for life, liberty, and John Locke, you know, the original Enlightenment philosopher in the late 1600s, it said life, liberty, and private property. And no, our founders changed that to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, a quality life, that people need not be in want. And we can do it. We can do it, you and I. You know, they say, there's an old saying, that a fish rots from the head down. And I don't know, frankly, if it's true. I've never watched a fish rot. But it's a great metaphor. And it's used mostly in the context of business to, you know, essentially suggest that when you've got somebody at the top of an organization and, you know, who is essentially corrupt, that something, you know, something's wrong, and you've got somebody who's corrupt, you've got something going on that's corrupt, that is going to become part of the culture of the entire organization. And, you know, I can tell you, I've worked with enough organizations over the years. I haven't worked for an organization as an employee in probably 30 years. Until right now, oddly enough, you know, the morning show I do on KPOJ, it's really interesting, you know, working in a radio station with a bunch of other people. But anyhow, I can tell you, the corporate culture, the culture of an organization, and I've run a bunch of them, you know, over the years, certainly, and I've worked as a consultant in many. The culture of an organization is defined at the top. You know, you could say it's human nature. You could say it's the nature of our hierarchies, you know, our dominator hierarchies, you know, whatever you want. I mean, you know, there's a million possible explanations for it, but the bottom line is that's real, and that when you have corruption at the top, when you have evil at the top, to use George Bush's favorite word, when you have the acceptance of things that are inappropriate, like torture, at the top, it filters down. And even small things. Here we have this story now in the New York Times over the weekend. Military says troops demanded rent from Iraqi vendors. Now, you know, it's a protection racket. It's the old-fashioned protection racket like you used to see, you know, in the mob-controlled cities all over the United States, and you still see. And it's not just the mob now. There's gangs that do the same thing. They come by and they say, you know, hey, you know, it's a nice store you got here. I'm sure you wouldn't want anybody to burn it out or blow it up or shoot it up. And there's nasty people out there, and if you just give us $500 a month, we'll make sure that nobody harms you. And, of course, the people that would harm you are them if you didn't pay them. I mean, trick-or-treat is a variation on this, right? Give us a treat or you're going to get a trick. Well, California Army National Guard troops, this from the New York Times by Scott Gold, Times staff writer. California Army National Guard troops charged unauthorized, off-the-books rent to Iraqi-owned businesses inside Baghdad's Green Zone in order to raise money for a soldiers' fund. Yes, a soldiers' fund, military officials said. This, by the way, the latest disclosure, according to the Times, to emerge from a wide-ranging investigation in the conduct of the 1st Battalion of the 184th Infantry Regiment of the Guard, which is headquartered in Modesto, California. Others have been suspended for problems within this group in the past. They note that the money was used to create a fund for the soldier. They called it a soldier's fund, said one member of the battalion who spoke on condition of anonymity. Such funds are used by troops for a wide variety of purposes, such as small loans to repay bills back home or buying commemorative so-called challenge coins, often specially minted to foster morale inside a unit. Kent said the fund created from the rent money also was used to buy T-shirts, patches, and a safe. Isn't that sweet? Army officials say the total was 4,000. Troops in the battalion said the scheme raised 30,000. Which is a lot of money if you're an Iraqi street vendor. We're talking big bucks here. Major big bucks here. And, I really think, you know, when this article appeared in the Los Angeles Times, that the instinct of most people was going to be to say, ah, look at that, you know, the troops are engaged in some sort of terrible activity. Quack, quack, quack. Can't have that. It's terrible. Blah-de-blah. And the reality is, well, yeah, of course. And I got to say, it's not the troops. I'm sorry. I mean, this is where you get into this whole thing of people who say, you know, oppose the war, support the troops. That it's not the troops. It is from the top down. You've got pay or play. The Bush administration saying, George Bush in his speech to the as he's going to have Friday in Crawford, Texas. He's going to have a big black tie affair. Big time donors coming in. They don't want Cindy Sheehan there. She'll be an embarrassment. And, you know, as Bush said to his donors, he says, this is an interesting troop. Some folks call you the wealthy elite. He says, I call you my base, the haves and the have-mores. And, of course, it's a base into which he was born. And, you know, everybody understands with this administration, you give George Bush $200,000, as Mr. Timken did from Ohio, and guess what? You get to be the ambassador to Germany. Do you speak German? Nope. You ever been to Germany? Nope. You think it might upset the Germans a little? I can tell you they're hugely insulted. I've read the article in Der Spiegel about it. They feel like they've been slapped in the face. But the guy gave $200,000 to George Bush. What are you going to do? Almost all of his ambassadors have nothing to do with ambassadorial experience. It all has to do with how much money they gave to George W. Bush. Or the Republicans. And this is just a tragedy. It's an absolute tragedy. And I think it's so important that when you read stories like this, you see things like this article in the L.A. Times, I'd said New York Times, but the L.A. Times, you see articles like this about how, you know, the troops are doing this, troops are doing that, troops are torturing people, you know, that terrible Lindy England, look at that woman. She must have been a real sadist because she went all the way over to Iraq and she must have taken those dog collars with her. Somehow I rather doubt it. A fish rots from the head down. And the Bush administration, this administration, arguably the most corrupt administration in the history of the United States, certainly the most anti-democratic administration since the John Adams administration. And now you've got, you know, these right-wing historians out there, David McCullough and whatnot, trying to reinvent John Adams and trash Thomas Jefferson. Because Thomas Jefferson founded the Democratic Party, and Adams, you know, was one of the, Yes, we should have an aristocracy in the United States. It should be different than England's, though. It should, instead of by birth, it should be by merit. It should be a meritocracy. But you can't trust what John Adams referred to as the rabble. Can't trust the rabble. We can't have the rabble running this country. That would be a dangerous thing. If you want to drop by our chat room, the email address is tomhartman.com. Just click live chat. If you'd like to give us a call, our telephone number, outside the United States, 503-248-0620. Inside the United States, coast to coast, 866-889-8894. Roy in Rio Rancho, New Mexico on the line. Hey, Roy, what's up?
Good morning, Tom. Well, the president is in Albuquerque today, screwing up traffic and getting all of the local right-wing talk show hosts all just excited, and they're just busting a gut. And, in fact, that was the purpose of my call. I called one of them because they said, if you were down there, what would you ask the president? And I just...
And I'm guessing people were calling in with fluff questions.
Well, I don't know because I tuned into them over a break, you know, and I got into it. So I called in and I said, well, the comment that I'd like to make to the president is, number one, he really confirms, you know, Mr. President, you confirm my stereotyped perception that once an addict, always an addict, and it doesn't matter whether it's cocaine or alcohol or religion. And the host just about went crazy. And then I said, and then he said something, and I said, well, no, because you didn't let me finish my question. And I say, and if you are so religious, why are you such a big liar? And he said, don't start that stuff. He lied. I said, he is a bona fide liar. He lied when he said that Saddam did not let the troops in, the inspectors in.
Yeah.
No, it was on the nightly news. They were there. He wouldn't say that, and I said he did. We got into the point where I'm on the phone with him, and I said, I bet $100 that in less than an hour I can bring a printout of a transcript where he said it down to the station, and he wouldn't take the bet.
Huh.
Absolutely wouldn't take the bet. Now, what I would like to do is be able to send him the MP3 file.
Yeah.
That you play quite often.
Yeah.
But it was, I mean, they just absolutely refuse to hear. They refuse to hear. And I don't know what kind of controversy I stirred up because I just immediately left. This is the station that the morning host, he's kind of their new guy. He was on our big 50,000-watt Rush Limbaugh station for 20 years. And he got into contract hassle. And so they fired off this new station. And they went down from bad to worse. They were 2.4 before they changed formats, and they're down to 1.6 after the last book.
Yeah.
So it's, but we're, I don't know. It just, the whole attitude in Albuquerque today is everybody's just bending over. It's just so wonderful he's here. And here we've just come off of Hiroshima. This is the whole nuclear thing. We had a protest up in Los Alamos. So anyway, on and on.
Well, I'll play that clip for you when we come back from the break, Roy.
Terrific.
And you can record it off the air if you want. I'll do it with a little silence around it.
And, okay.
And then you can just play it back for him.
White Rose tonight.
Yeah, there you go. Okay. Good talking to you, Roy. It's 20 minutes past the hour.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
I've been waiting for something to happen, for a week or a month or a year, with the blood in the ink of the headlines and the sound of the crowd in my ear.
You tell them, Jackson Brown.
You might ask what it takes to remember when you know that you've seen it before, where a government lies to a people and a country is drifting to war. There's a shadow on the faces of the men who sent the guns to the wars that are fought in places where their business interests run
on the radio, talk shows, and the TV. You hear one thing again and again, how the USA stands for freedom, and we come to the aid of a friend. But who are the ones that we call our friends? These governments are killing their own.
And welcome back, my friends. 26 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-889-8894. Roy, here is your clip. This is George Bush. He was answering a question about why did you lie about the Africa, the uranium in Niger, when Stephen Hadley had removed that from two of your previous speeches. You knew it was not correct. We now have the paperwork. Condoleezza Rice knew it was not correct, and yet you put it into the State of the Union. And first he does a little tiptoe around that, and then he ends up saying that Saddam would not let the inspectors in. And you'll recall the inspectors, specifically Hans Blix and Mohammed al-Baradei, were removed by George Bush from Iraq, so that they wouldn't be bombed, not by Saddam Hussein. In fact, here's Hans Blix, first of all.
You know, in the Middle Ages, when people were convinced they were witches, and then they looked for them, they certainly found them. And this is a bit risky. I think we were more judicious in saying that we want to have real evidence. And I'm not going to cite what the intelligence agencies are saying unless I have the evidence for it. If I had that, well, then I would do it.
But, of course, he didn't have that. And therefore, he was not able to, as Resolution 1440 required, before any nation, including the United States, could commence any sort of hostility against Iraq, he was not able to sign off on the form and say, yes, Iraq is in violation of 1440. So anyhow, the inspectors were not, Saddam welcomed the inspectors with open arms because, as we know now in retrospect, he had nothing to hide. Here's George Bush, first of all, weaseling around the uranium claim in his speech, and then he decides to wrap it up with what he thinks is a punchline.
Subsequent to the peace speech, the CIA had some doubts, but when they talked about the speech, when they looked at the speech, it was cleared. Otherwise, I wouldn't have put it in the speech. I'm not interested in talking about intelligence unless it's cleared by the CIA. And as Director Tenet said, it was cleared by the CIA. The larger point is, and the fundamental question is, did Saddam Hussein have a weapons program? And the answer is absolutely. And we gave him a chance to allow the inspectors in, and he wouldn't let them in. And therefore, after a reasonable request, we decided to remove him from power along with other nations so as to make sure he was not a threat to the United States.
Now, you have to ask the question, was George Bush intentionally lying? Or is he suffering from the syndrome, there's a fancy name for it, which I forget, it's named after a couple of scientists, of the consequence of long-term severe alcoholism where a lot of brain tissue has been damaged? Was he deluded? Or had they decided that they were going to intentionally put out this, propaganda? I mean, was this the clip that Fox News played over and over and over again, and that's why Fox News watchers believe it, but nobody else did? I mean, what was going on? Why would he say that? I mean, what could have possibly led him to make such a claim? I mean, it's just because it just plain old, flat out, patently wasn't true. It was a lie. And he didn't correct it. I mean, he just came out and said it. You know, why would he do that? I frankly don't have the answer. And, it's, one of the great questions, I suppose, of all time. Why? As Carolyn Carey's case says, if a Bush tells a lie and nobody knows about it, was a lie ever told?
Inspectors in, and he wouldn't let them in. And therefore, after a reasonable request, we decided to remove him from power along with other nations so as to make sure he was not a threat.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
There is no United Nations. There is an international community that occasionally can be led by the only real power left in the world, and that's the United States, when it suits our interests.
Well, if you want somebody who will kiss up and someone who will kick down,
It's John Bolt.
His opinions and whose mustache makes him look like a foxhound lord. John Bolton is the man to send to town. He'll turn the United Nations upside down.
Yes, indeed. Welcome back, my friends. 25 minutes before the hour. I'm Tom Hartman with you. 27 minutes before the hour. Our analog clock is getting flaky here. Welcome back to the program. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number. We'll be getting to your calls in just a moment. First, Ellen Ratner, our correspondent in Washington, D.C., is with us with a report from what's happening deep in the belly of the beast. Hey,
well,
Ellen.
A whole lot is happening deep in the belly of the beast. The president was out in New Mexico today visiting solar. That's what it's called, the solar energy component at the Kirkland Air Force Base, and signing the energy bill. That was his big deal today.
Yeah.
And today, Alberto Gonzalez was in Chicago at the American Bar Association House of Delegates giving a speech. What about two major things, Tom? The Voting Rights Act and how wonderful that is, and the Patriot Act, and he
said. Wait a second. Has the administration now come out in favor of renewing the Voting Rights Act?
Well, they're saying that, of course, this was signed 40 years ago and how wonderful it was. But no, he's not saying they're in favor of it.
We don't need it anymore.
He's just saying that, you know, that a group marching towards Montgomery to highlight injustice of the disenfranchised only got a few blocks out of town. He said they turned it into Bloody Sunday. And today he said the power to vote is a great opportunity. He celebrates the passage of the law. And he said how successful it was, he just goes on and on and on.
You know, Ellen, why it's so important that the Voting Rights Act be renewed is because we need it now. Certainly minorities still need protections of the Voting Rights Act, but I'm telling you, white people need the protections of the Voting Rights Act now. I mean, we're being disenfranchised. We, just speaking for myself, white people in Ohio, for example, Democrats who wanted to vote in heavily Democratic districts, you know, suburban white districts, they were not allowed to vote. They had to wait 8, 10, 12 hours. Their votes might not have been counted. The machines are being rigged and stolen. I mean, we need a Voting Rights Act that cut, you know, for everybody in America. It's not just minorities anymore. These guys are trying to screw out of their vote.
Well, then he goes on today to say the Patriot Act is another law that effectively addresses the single challenge of this era, fighting terrorism. Now he compares it. Listen to this. Much like the Voting Rights Act and the Federal Sentencing Reform Act, the Patriot Act is a measured but vitally necessary response to the central challenge of our day. And then he goes on and on about the Patriot Act, and he said, well, you've probably heard the arguments on both sides, but I want to be straightforward. We're not snooping into the medical records of everyday Americans. We are still at war with a patient and adaptable enemy. We are not in a position to relent in this fight. He said, we're not interested in reading the habits of ordinary citizens, as some have suggested.
Yep.
So that's his thing today.
That's. Well, you know, it's 1984. George Orwell is rolling in his grave, and these guys are just keeping on with it. Ellen, thank you for the...
You're very welcome.
Did you have something else you were going to
add?
Well,
yeah, it's kind of interesting. A group in Washington, sort of a liberal group, is now, as you know, I report for Guam, and apparently the acting U.S. attorney for the District of Guam and the Northern Mariana Islands, Frederick Black, was actually demoted from the Department of Justice for his looking into the Abramoff scandal.
Oh, how dare he cross Jack Abramoff and Tom DeLay and all the other politicians Abramoff has corrupted.
That's right.
Probably even George Bush is in that group.
Amazing.
Yeah, it is. Okay. Thanks a lot, Ellen.
You're welcome.
Good to hear from you. I appreciate it. George, why me? Why do you have to do it to us? I mean, George, why us? Why us?
Why me, George? What have I ever done?
What did we do?
To deserve even one of the plagues that you've sown.
Yeah, why me, George?
Tell me, George, what did I ever do for a whiz kid like you to bring chaos to my home? Lord, help me, Jesus, we didn't vote for him, but we can't ignore him,
No, we can't. I mean, how can you ignore this?
He's using
your name to advance his own game. Now we're in doo-doo, way up to
And me. That's putting it charitably.
Tell me, George, if there's any damn way that there'll ever be a day I can get on a plane
without worrying about the next maniac.
About the next maniac trying to pay me back just 'cause you're half insane. Right-wing freak judges, $200 billion grudges. Yes, war's cooked up right from day one. Big corporations are running this nation like it never was meant to be run.
George, I hope you're having fun.
Yes, George, I hope you're having fun.
That brilliant satire done by my good friend Jim Turr over at BlueCanyonSatire.com or BlueCanyonProductions.com. You can get a copy of Why Me, George. A free copy, I might add. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. And my favorite 90-year-old, Alice in Humboldt County, California, listening on KGOE, is on the line. Hey, Alice.
Hi, Tom.
You're actually over 90, aren't you?
91.
I hope I'm not embarrassing you with that.
Oh, no, no, no. We're having a big bash here on the 12th.
Is that your birthday? You're turning 92?
No, no. That's going to be for everybody here.
Oh, how
There's
nice.
15 of us.
15? Oh, in where you live?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Oh, that's wonderful. That's wonderful.
Oh, yeah.
Well,
and we have a big party.
Yeah, happy birthday to everybody. So what's on your mind today, Alice?
Okay. You sometimes speak of harm done to our country by Reagan and Bush, Senior and Junior, and you sometimes include Bill Clinton.
Yes.
In there, and that makes me cringe.
Okay.
I believe that Bill Clinton was a much better president, particularly over what we have now.
I agree.
And he left us financially in good shape.
I agree.
Okay.
agree with you.
Do you agree with me?
Yeah, my criticisms of Bill Clinton are very specific. I believe that when he signed NAFTA and GATT, and he may have believed that they were the right thing, but when he signed these free trade agreements, that was the high point of the selling out of American industry and harming the American middle class. And when he signed the Telecommunications Act in 1996, he made it easier for the big media conglomerates to get even bigger, and that was not a good thing for democracy. But see, you set those two things aside, I think by and large Bill Clinton did a pretty good job as president.
Oh, yeah. Well, I blessed him for leaving us financially in good shape.
Yes. Yeah. No, he had some financial rationality to him. And I'd say, you know, he did. It's a shame that the harm done by the World Trade Organization and NAFTA and the Telecommunications Act is so serious, because had those three things not been done, he would have, in my mind, he would have been one of our better presidents.
Yeah.
And as it was, it's a checkered presidency. But I understand what you're saying, Allison, and I agree with you by and large. Bill Clinton was a friend of the environment and worked hard for women's rights, and in many ways was a very good president. I still think that it's important that we point out that he was part of the DLC. He was part of the, you know, get the corporations in bed with the Democratic Party crowd. And I don't think that that served anybody's benefit, frankly. So,
okay. We all make mistakes.
We do. We all do. Myself included. Alice, thank you for the call. Great to hear from you.
Okay. Have a good day.
Okay. You too. Have a wonderful one. 1-866-889-8894. Telephone number. Preston in Denver, Colorado on the line. Hey, Preston.
Hey, Tom. You were talking about that phrase about how the fish rots from the head down.
Yeah.
I was thinking maybe the fish heals from the tail up. And by that I mean by the grassroots getting busy and engaging their political body. And
well, that's a good reverse metaphor. I mean, here's perhaps a more legitimate one, and that is that grass grows from the ground up. You know?
Yeah, you bet. And we see many examples of that. For example, the Kyoto treaties that are taking place in cities and municipalities, states pressuring for their own reductions in carbon dioxide and pushing for mass transit and solar and all that good stuff.
Yeah.
And more recently, in a journal called the International Socialist Review. I know that's a dirty word, socialism, but it's a great magazine. They had an article about how before our Declaration of Independence at the federal level, there were like 90 declarations of independence from cities around the colonies,
yeah,
saying they had had enough of the British colonialism.
Oh, yeah, yeah. The 1776 wasn't the beginning of it. It was the culmination of it.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I was wondering if you're going to be at the Solar Festival yourself. I noticed you spoke at it last year.
Yeah, I spoke there last year. This year I'm not going to be able to make it.
Okay.
So,
well,
yeah,
again, there's just so much of that kind of good work going on.
Yeah, there is. I will be at the Bioneers Conference this fall.
So great.
And not Soulfest.
Regarding the media, too, we often see the big Fox and CNN and all that mess. But people like Jim Hightower have pointed out how if you add together efforts like your own and Democracy Now!, the countless journals and websites, we're actually bigger than the audiences of Fox News and the rest of that mess. And the documentaries that are coming out, there's another elder, Howard Zinn, he's almost 90 now, a documentary about his life just came out.
Yeah.
And he's a veteran as well that I think we should pay attention to.
Yeah, he's a World War II veteran. Good point, Preston. Thank you for raising that. And the reality is we are growing. We are absolutely growing in numbers and in strength. And the reason why is not because we're being driven by hundreds of millions of dollars, billions of dollars, from conservative, elderly conservative families like the Coors family or the Mellon Scaife fortune, or the Walmart fortune like the Republicans and like the conservatives, but rather that the people of America are simply waking up. They're realizing what the agenda of these people is and are, and they're horrified. They're just horrified. That's what's really going on. Nick in Pittsburgh on the phone. Hey, Nick, what's on your mind today?
Thanks for taking the call. The Cindy Sheehan thing?
Yes, sir.
I'd like to know if it's right here, if we can use this time on the radio to advocate for all the people listening to call your congressmen, call your senators, and find out how much of a representative democracy we have and how many of them will stand up and say, wait a minute, something is definitely wrong with this picture. Or would this be construed as being a threat to national security? And are we out there also undermining the war on terror?
Well, first of all, I doubt that most of your members of Congress, I mean, it's a fine thing to call 1-877-SOB-USOB and ask for your elected representative and say, hey, listen, I stand in solidarity with Cindy Sheehan, and I hope you will too. I encourage everybody to do that. But even more important, I think, is for individuals to show up down there. When I talked to Cindy this morning, she said the most useful thing that could happen is for individuals to show up so that there's a large number of people, because now, you know, she's been told that she's going to be arrested on Thursday when Rice and Rumsfeld show up, and then they got this big fundraiser on Friday, of course, and they you know, all these rich folks are coming into town, and they don't want them to have them to drive by the mother of a child who died
rabble.
In Iraq. Yeah, the rabble. Exactly.
Rabble, right.
To use John Adams' term, yeah, the rabble.
Well, I think my call is for those of us that we know we can't make it down there, and so I think the next best thing is, like, I've already made two calls to my senators here and our local officials, and I intend to make more, because in solidarity, I think, and I also want to see how many, like, what kind of guts, what kind of, you know, will these people stand up and finally say, wait a minute, we got a constitution, we have a constitutional right to do these kind of things, what's going on?
Yeah. Yeah, well said. I know that in my interview with her, by the way, she mentioned a website, Meet with Cindy. It's not up right now. I don't know if it's been taken down by a denial of service attack, or if we got the URL wrong. But we'll track that down. See, maybe we can find out what's going on here. In fact, let me just try here, just www.meetwithcindy. And let's see if maybe .com will do it, because, no, that doesn't seem to be it either. I don't know. There's something wrong with their website. But whatever you can do to help her out, much appreciated. Absolutely. And if we can't call her, we can at least call. And call the media. That's a really important thing. Contact your local media, your local newspaper, your local radio stations, your local television station, and say, I sure hope you are covering that courageous woman of the soldier who died in Iraq, Cindy Sheehan, who's down there in Crawford, Texas. And call the national news media and make sure that they know that you think that this is a big story. CBS, ABC, NBC, CNN, and even Fox News. You can find all of the contact information on their respective websites. 1-866-889-8894. Telephone number, Diane in McKinleyville, California. Hey, Diane, we have about a minute left. I'm sorry, we're getting kind of tight here.
Well,
actually, I was calling for the same reason your previous caller did. A big red flag went up when you said threat to national security. I mean, that says to me, okay, so if you are going to peacefully disagree with this administration, we can arrest you under threat to national security.
Well, they've been doing that for 4 years now, Diane. If you show up at a Bush campaign event holding a carry sign,
right,
at the point of a gun, they will put you in a cage. They call
right.
it a free speech zone, but and they claim that the reason why they're doing it is national security.
Mm-hmm.
So.
But this sounds really scary if she can be arrested and then not have access to, if they can use that phrase, threat to national security, and then not allow access to attorneys, the public, the news media, et cetera.
Yeah.
That is very scary.
It is truly scary. And it is we are revisiting the time when the word homeland was first used.
Mm-hmm.
Can you remember the word, Diane, can you remember the word homeland being used before George Bush came along at all in the United States?
Yeah,
ever?
Right.
a serious question. Can you ever remember the word homeland being used in the United States?
No.
I can't either. Let me tell you a story about that when we come back from this. It's 10 minutes before the hour. Thanks for the call, Diane. Good to hear from you. I'm Tom Hartman.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
It's closing time.
Ah, yes, time to wrap up the program.
Out we're lonely, we're romantic, and the Saturdays with acid, and the Holy Spirit's crying, where's the beef? And the moon is swimming naked, and the summer night is fragrant with a mighty expectation of relief.
Thank you, Leonard. Good old Leonard Cohen there. Welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you. Where progressives fiendishly plot for total world domination. Speaking of total world domination, something Adolf Hitler had in mind. In the 1920s, Adolf Hitler, when he was imprisoned, actually, along with Rudolf Hess, the two of them wrote, although Hess's name isn't on it, wrote Mein Kampf. And Hitler did a study. He was fascinated by Judaism. And he did a study of the Zionist movement, and back then the Zionist movement literally meant, let's have a homeland, a Jewish homeland in Israel. And he thought it was very powerful the way that the Jews of Germany or of Europe used this word homeland, that it made people feel that there was a racial connection. And he felt that the German people had to have a sense of shared race, so that there would be an us versus them mentality, and they would be willing to follow their leader wherever he led, no matter what. Absolutely no matter what. And so in 1934, at the Nuremberg rally, when Hitler rose to power, Rudolf Hess introduced him, and it was the first time that they used the word homeland in reference to something outside of literally a racial or religious group, that being, Zionism traditionally or historically. And Rudolf Hess introduced Hitler, and he said, thanks to the Führer, dank to our Führer, we now have a homeland, Heimat, for alles Deutsches in the ganze world, to all the Germans in the whole world.
Dank ihrer Führung wird Deutschland sein Ziel erreichen, Heimat zu sein.
Heimat zu sein. We have a homeland.
Heimat zu sein für alle Deutschen der Welt.
For all the Germans in the world. That was the last time the word homeland was used, and then, strangely, right after 9/11, George Bush started using the word homeland. I had never heard the word homeland used in reference to the United States before. It was always national security, domestic security, the United States of America, our great nation. All of a sudden, they're using the word homeland. And, Hitler had passed his Patriot Act right after the Reichstag fire, with a 4-year sunset provision on it to limit civil liberties. And, on it goes, anyway. Something for another time. But I thought you might like to hear that little clip. The last time the word homeland was used. It's a Tom Hartman radio program. We'll see you tomorrow. Thanks for being with us today.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.